Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our checkup with Northwestern Medicine, emergency medicine physician for Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Jeffrey Bomer joins us now. Good morning, doctor. Let's talk about a good topic for early Monday morning, caffeine. And there's many studies on this, and the most recent one was the connection with blood vessel health. How much caffeine is good for us? What are these studies telling us now?
Yeah, I think this study kind of breaks it down for us a little bit. I think, you know, like everything else in life, so it seems like we just want to be, it's moderation is the key, right? So I think we've seen studies that show its benefits, particularly coffee, because of those compounds like the flavonoids and the polyphenols that have the antioxidant properties. So we know that coffee by itself is healthy, but, you know, the caffeine, the question is how much is too much? So it looks like a couple 2 to 3 cups of coffee is probably where you should draw the line, Bob. I would say if you're a coffee drinker, I think if you're going beyond there, I think you may want to switch over to decaf when you're getting up to that third or fourth cup of coffee. Because in the low end, if you're drinking, you know, 2 to 3 cups of coffee, there are actually some benefits for cardiovascular health. It reduces type 2 diabetes. Probably has some caffeine. Probably has some sort of impact on the sensitivity of insulin and promote some fat metabolism in our body. So I think that's why you see those benefits. But if you get into that fourth and fifth cup of coffee, then you start talking about having an impact on our heart disease. So you see rises in blood pressure, rises in heart rates, and those probably have, you know, in the long term, probably have negative effects on those blood vessels and probably leads to cardiovascular disease over the long period of time. So, you know, probably moderate, you know, go moderate, you know, 2 to 3 cups and cut it off, and then maybe switch to decaf if you got to keep drinking after that.
Yeah, and watch out for those energy drinks and soda also, right?
Absolutely. Loaded with caffeine. Yes, exactly.
This is also an interesting topic for those of us on the morning shift. how stress and sleep gut imbalances are connected. And this is actually a study about colorectal cancer, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And this one really caught my eye as well. By being an emergency room physician and working shift work and doing a lot of night shifts, my circadian rhythms have been disrupted for the last several years. So this really caught my eye. But yeah, it turns out these are all just animal studies, particularly actually specifically mice studies. But they basically stressed these mice and found that the microbiomes or the good bacteria in their intestinal tracts was markedly disrupted. They actually saw depletion of specific types of good bacteria like lactobacillus. So when that happens, it creates a sort of an atmosphere, if you will, of inflammation in the intestinal tract. And that inflammation, as we talked about many times before, is not good for the body. Hmm. And so it really is a situation that's promoting cancer to occur. And then they looked at these mice, and actually they were able to induce tumors in these mice in their intestinal tracts. And then they saw what the effects of the bad, you know, sort of microbiomes when the microbiome was depleted by stress, and they saw that those tumors grew a lot quicker than they did in those mice that did not. Actually went as far as actually doing a fecal transplant where they took the stool out of the mice that had been stressed, put it in another mouse or other mice that actually caused those tumors to grow even faster. So clearly has a significant impact. And then when they were giving the lactobacillus back to the mice, they saw that the tumor growth went down. So clearly a connection there with when there's a lot of stress, you know, disrupting your sleep, you know, just general stress in life clearly has an impact on our ability to develop cancer and then our ability to fight cancer once it's in there. So I think, there's definitely a connection there. A lot more research needs to be done. These are obviously just in mice, but I think it goes to say that this the microbiome in our intestinal tracts has a lot to do with our general health. So it's a good idea to try to mitigate any kind of stress you can and get your sleep.
So when you talk about a disruption to your circadian rhythm being really bad for your health, how do you fix that? I mean, is the answer to that just being on the same schedule all the time?
Yeah, if you can. You know, of course, in my line of work, that's near impossible. So I think it's really trying to get a goal of setting it, it. There's been some studies that look at it. You got to find your sort of your anchor sleep, or there's a specific time of day where you actually get that sleep, whatever that is. But I think, you know, it's getting into a regular pattern is probably is important. And then getting the amount of sleep obviously varies from person to person. But, you know, I think there's a lot of research that says that 7 hours at a minimum is key to promoting good health. So I think that probably starts there, is just at least getting that 7 solid hours of time to get some good sleep.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, we know stress is bad for us. And, of course, by talking about this particular health issue, I'm now stressed out. Thank you very much, Doctor.
You would be bold. Yeah.
All right, hold on, because I want to get to an interesting story about these weight loss drugs and also things you should do for your brain health every day. Dr. Jeffrey Boner is emergency medicine physician for Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Doctor, as you know, it seems like everybody is on Ozempic or another weight loss drug these days. And now, according to this study, there's a side benefit that I hadn't heard about before. Tell us about this.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've seen this anecdotally with some of my patients that I've seen in the emergency department that are on these drugs, and I've heard other physicians talk about this. But there's been this sort of decrease in cravings, if you will, specifically with alcohol, and I think it spills over into illicit drugs as well. So yeah, they looked at a study looked at about a million subjects, and they compared the groups, those were on either Wegovy or Ozempic, you know, the semaglutide, or those that were not, and they saw a 40% lower chance of overdosing on heroin and other illicit drugs, and a 50% lower chance of experiencing alcohol intoxication. So It has something to do with reducing those cravings, and it probably is similar to how, at least in some ways, how it affects the brain and why people are eating less, and it triggers. It's in my mind, it has to be something that affects the dopamine, whether it be the receptors of dopamine or the amount of produced dopamine in the brain. But there has to be some effect indirectly on that. But yeah, it's pretty remarkable. So I think it's certainly, you know, far away from being a primary treatment for those with alcohol use disorder or any kind of illicit drug use disorder. But I think it's something that is going to be looked at, because they're seeing a clear connection that a lot of patients are showing benefits in reducing the amount of substance abuse. So it's a great added benefit. You know, it's another one of these things that shows that these may be some sort of miracle drugs in their own.
Wow. So not just food cravings that those drugs can help with. That is interesting. Have you had a chance to look at this list that came out recently of the things you should do for your brain health every day, according to neurologists? I mean, you know, I was looking at this, and not too many surprises. But what caught my eye, I don't know what you thought of the list, Doctor, but, you know, you're hearing more about how important social engagement is to living a long, healthy life. There are a lot of studies about this now, aren't there?
There are. Yeah. I mean, you read anything about the things that people can do to prevent the development of Alzheimer's dementia, and one of the keys is always, anything I've ever read, is really, you know, making sure that you're staying engaged. So, you know, staying indoors and not getting out and really getting out and meeting people, talking to people, is really detrimental to our neurological health. So I think there's definitely a connection. You know, it probably produces certain neurotransmitters in our brain that form these new connections in our brain when we do meet people or talk to people, engage with people. So there's that person-to-person connection really is important to maintaining our neurological health. And I think there are studies that show they can help reduce the development of Alzheimer's dementia by just staying engaged. So yeah, get out there, join a club, play, get some pickleball, whatever it is that really is going to keep you engaging with people is super important to at least something that you can actively do to help prevent Alzheimer's dementia.
And the neurologists interviewed for this list also, of course, mentioned diet and exercise, and you keep hearing about that Mediterranean diet being the best, don't you?
It sure does. It comes up all the time. I mean, I think it's an easy recipe, so to speak, and to to really get everything you need, you know, fruits, vegetables, whole foods, you know, the healthy fats, all those things, fish. I mean, those are all great. They provide everything that really promotes good neurological health. And really, I mean, it promotes, you know, it goes back again to intestinal health, that maintaining that good microbiome, but high in fiber. So those things really, you know, they all kind of come back and really are the things that we need to do if we really are interested in preserving our, not just our physical health, but our mental health as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting list. And I know when my wife hears about this, she's going to tell me to talk to more people. Don't turn down, invitations anymore for dinner parties. So, but maybe she's got a point, huh? Be more sociable. Dr. Jeffrey Bomer, Northwestern Medicine. Thank you. Talk to you again soon, Doctor. Appreciate it.
Thank you.